Welcome to the podcast of Trinity Church London. You're listening to a message given on a Sunday morning. If you'd like to know more about us and the life of the church, please visit trinitychurchlondon.com.
Today we are in Joshua 4. I have the privilege of continuing our series today. And Sam read, we meet the Israelites at a pivotal moment in their journey. God had just performed this amazing, miraculous act on their behalf. Like, he'd stopped the flow of the river so that the people could cross over on dry land into the promised land. So we can just imagine the emotions that the people will be feeling at this time. Like, they had just witnessed something amazing. God has stopped the river from flowing. They would have heard all the stories from their parents, right? The stories of how God parted the Red Sea, and now they were living in a similar moment. And then we can just also imagine just how overwhelmed they would have felt at being the generation that finally got to inherit the promises that God made to Abraham. And as I was reading this chapter, over and over again, I just kept thinking to myself, if this was a feel-good movie, like, I can just imagine the credits rolling at this point. Like, we, the audience, would be watching the Israelites finally cross into the promised land as the music plays and the screen fades to black, leaving us to assume that they entered into the land and they lived happily ever after. But we know that's not the end of the story. So even though they were now in the promised land, there were many battles ahead of them. At this point in their journey, they would actually now be called to greater faith than they had in order to take possession of the land. So there were many battles ahead of them. There were much land to be conquered and many trials ahead of them. I actually have a map. Do we have the map? So this is, I was hoping it to be like a lot bigger and fill the screen. But this is the area, I don't know if everyone can see, where they would have crossed in, because it's about 6 miles from Jericho. And Jericho was the place, obviously, they were to have their first battle. But just imagine that they had all of this to conquer. Like, even me just looking at it, I feel a bit overwhelmed. Like, so I can't even imagine what the Israelites would have felt at that time, having all of that ahead of them to conquer. And I think, just on a side note, isn't it great that God doesn't show us all the battles that we're going to face in life all at once? Because, I don't know what would have done. So anyway, there were many, you can take the map off, I'll leave it on. There were many battles ahead of them. So the big question at this stage is, how were the people going to face each battle that they came across? And if it were me, like, I would be thinking very practically. It's like, do we have enough men? Do we have enough weapons? Do we have basically what we need to be able to conquer the land? But that was not God's strategy. The first thing that God says to them is to build a memorial, just as Sam just read. And I'm just going to read it again. Not the whole passage, don't worry. Just from verse 1. So when all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, take 12 men from the people, from each tribe of man, and command them, saying, take 12 stones from out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over to where you... And bring them with you over and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight. Then Joshua called the 12 men and the people of Israel, where he had appointed a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, pass on before the ark of the Lord your God in the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribe of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign amongst you. Like, when your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the water of the Jordans were cut off. So these stones shall be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. So this is not the first time in the Bible that we hear God asking people to build a memorial, or where there is a command to remember God, remember what God has done. Even while the Israelites were in the wilderness, over and over again, Moses would tell them repeatedly, do not forget the Lord your God. Do not forget his commands. Bind them on your hands. Put them on the forehead. Teach them diligently to your children. Do not forget what God has done for you. And he even said to them, when you enter into the promised land, do not forget. When you build houses and you settle in, do not forget the Lord. So it seems like whenever there's a command to remember or not to forget, there's usually a sense of urgency about it. It's like the Bible is saying to us, like, this is really important. Remember the things that God has done for you. Remember his goodness. Remember his faithfulness. But the sad thing is we do forget, don't we? Like, we so easily forget the things that God has done for us. Whenever a new challenge arises, we forget and we allow ourselves to be anxious and to be fearful about what's to come, forgetting that the same God who demonstrated his love and power for us in the past will do it again. And when we forget the past, it actually weakens our faith. And sometimes it's not just our faith, it's the faith of other people as well, and even future generations. Do you know that faithlessness can be contagious? Like, we see this in the story of the Israelites. The first time God calls them to go and spy out the land, how many? 10 out of them did not have the courage to do that. And because of that, everyone else sort of backed off, and they spent 40 years in the wilderness because of their lack of faith. So God wants us to know his goodness. He wants the good news of who he is and what he has done to be passed on from person to person, from generation to generation, so that we can move forward in his purposes, displaying his glory to those around us. He wants the generation to come to know who he is, to know his glory. In Psalm 78, we read, he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know, that children yet unborn might know, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God. So God is very intentional about his goodness being known, his faithfulness being known, and being passed on from generation to generation. Because if we fail to remember God's goodness, if we fail to tell the next generation our God's story, then we're likely to have a generation who do not know God. And sadly, we also see this play out in the life of Israel. As the story goes on, we're told of a new generation that rises up and they forsake the way of God because they don't know him. So there is an urgency to remember, because when we do remember what God has done, our faith is strengthened and we find the courage to move forward in the things of God. So it's important to know also that the command to remember is not just about an intellectual memory. It's about bringing the truth of who God is and what he has done in the past and bringing that truth into our present circumstances so that we can move forward in faith and obedience. So when God asked the people to build a memorial, to pick up stones, it was to serve to them as a reminder of all that God had done in the past, so that when the people of Israel came to face battle and opposition, they could move forward in faith. And I think actually it's interesting that God didn't just say, like, pick any stones and place them anywhere as a memorial. Like, he was very specific. He said, pick the stones from the Jordan and build a memorial. So essentially he was saying, pick the stones from the very place where I performed my miracle. Pick stones from the very place where you stepped out in faith and you saw my power at work. And then take them with you and place them where you'll be resting and build a memorial there. And we're told that the Israelites lodged at a place called Gilgal, which is about a mile or 2 miles from Jericho. So from the place where they would have been lodging, they would have been able to see Jericho, the place where they were going to have their first battle. So I actually believe that God telling them to set up this memorial in Gilgal was a deliberate move. I don't know about you guys, but I know that whenever I face a situation that is challenging or requires a lot of courage, like, the longer I think about it, the more likely fear and doubt start to creep in. And I get myself worked up into a stage where I'm, like, probably too afraid to move forward unless something breaks that fear. So I believe God told them to take those stones with them to Gilgal because there's a possibility that as they looked to Jericho, as they saw the fortified walls, the huge walls, maybe fear and doubt would have started to creep in. Like, they would have just started to to recognize how daunting the task ahead of them was. And you can almost hear their thoughts with them wondering, like, can we actually do this? Like, can we overthrow this city? Can we start a second service here on the Coin Street? You can just imagine the fear and the doubt start to creep in. But then they see the stones. They see the stones that have been built as a memorial, and they remember. They remember that these stones were taken from a place that God had performed a miracle. So they remember what he has done in the past. They remember who he has been in the past. And they don't only just remember the miracle that was at the River Jordan, but they remember the miracles in Egypt and in the wilderness. They remember that they were once slaves in Egypt, and with a mighty hand, God delivered them from the tyranny of Pharaoh. They remember that he parted the Red Sea when Pharaoh and his army were behind them in pursuit of them. They remember that he fed them in the wilderness with manna, and he brought water out of a rock. They remember, as it says in Deuteronomy 8, that their clothing did not wear out and their feet did not swell. So they see these stones, and they remember that even though they grumbled and rebelled against God, even though they questioned his love, even though they turned to idolatry and were unfaithful to God, God remained faithful to them. Like, he showed himself to be their redeemer, their protector, their provider. He went as a guide before them, as a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Like, he showed himself to be a friend to them. And not because they deserved it, but simply because he set his love on them. He showed them that he was a God of second chances. I mean, when their parents lacked the courage to go into the promised land, God gave a new generation a second chance to claim the land. So he showed them to be a God who keeps his promises, fulfilling the covenant that he made to their fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them this land as a possession. So they remember all that God has done in the past. They remember his faithfulness, and they bring the truth of all of that into their present circumstances to give them the confidence that this same God who was faithful in the past, will be faithful again. And this same God will carry them through to victory. So we can just imagine that as the days and the months and the years rolled by, those stones would have been a constant reminder of God's faithfulness, of his presence with them, giving them the faith and the courage to face each new battle. And we all have memorial stones, right? We might not have physical stones, but we do have memorial stones, like our testimonies, our memorial stones. Like, wasn't it great to hear the testimonies of people today? Like, we're encouraged by those. So we're called to remember the past, not just so we can stay and live in the past of what God has done, but so that the past can catalyze and carry our faith forward. I know certainly for me, like, the things that have kept me going in faith has been remembering God's faithfulness in my life. And it has also paved the way for breakthrough in certain areas of my life. And it's funny, obviously today Daniel was talking about finances, like giving to the church. And there was a time where wanting financial security was an idol in my life. Like, I wasn't trying to be like a millionaire or anything like that. I just wanted to have financial security, which there's nothing wrong with that, just in case you're wondering. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. But when it stops you from moving into the things that God has for you, then obviously it becomes an idol. And I just remember, like, when I had just examples of how it was an idol in my life. When I had just finished university, my church at the time invited me to do what's called an impact year. So it's a year where you have some biblical and theological training as well as serving the church. And when I saw the email, like, and I started to read it, I felt quite excited about it. I felt like, yeah, I think God is calling me to do this. Like, it seems like an amazing opportunity. But then as I continued to read the email, I saw, like, actually there was a cost to it. I mean, I just finished university. I had no money. But there was a cost to doing the year with the church. And I thought, well, obviously I can't do it because I have no money. And even if for some reason, some miracle, I got the money, I have no idea how I was going to support myself for a year. So it didn't even occur to me to pray about it. It didn't even occur to me to ask my pastor about it. I made a decision. I didn't have the money. I wasn't going to do it. And then God has a sense of humor, right? So a few years later, I felt a call to go and serve a church plant abroad. I was like, okay, here we go again. This time, I had grown in my faith, so I did pray about it. I did tell my pastor about it, and there was a sense of, yeah, this is right. This is what God's calling you to do. And so I thought, you know, as well as many other things that you have to consider finances. And I was working full-time at the time, and I had some savings. So I thought, okay, it's fine. I've got a job. I've got some savings. I will just do lots and lots and lots of extra shifts before I go. So build up my savings, and I will live on my savings when I'm out there. But then God, well, I felt God was asking me to leave my job about 5 months before I went. And I was like, no, like, please no. So I was like, oh, okay, what do I do? I was thinking about how am I going to survive? I've got the savings, but if I leave my job, then I have to live on my savings. So it means I don't have any money to go. So I partially obeyed God, meaning I disobeyed God. I partially obeyed God because I did leave my permanent job. However, I registered on the bank. And for of you who don't know, bank is basically like a zero-hour contract. So I could work for the hospital like whenever I wanted, but I wasn't permanently employed by them. But then one day on a night shift, I heard God clearly say, I'm taking you out of here. So I was like, okay, I'm going. So that was my last shift. And obviously I had this fear and this doubt, like, what was I going to do for money? I mean, it's a real concern. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't being silly in worrying about it. But I had to make a decision. It was like, either I was going to go and trust God, or I wasn't going to trust God, and I was going to stay. So I decided, okay, my faith has been increased since the last time a similar situation happened. It's like, okay, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to go. But I had a backup plan. Don't judge me. I had a backup plan. I was like, okay, I've got about, when it came time to go, I had about 3 months worth of like living expenses. So I was like, I'm going to go and set my mind that I'm going for a year, but I've got 3 months. And if somehow I don't get any more money, then I'm calling the bank of mom. I'm like, mom, please send me money. I need a plane ticket. I'm coming back to England. And that was my plan. But in stepping out in faith, even though it wasn't a perfect faith, God showed up. And I was there for the year because month by month, he provided. He didn't give me everything that I needed at once, but he steadily provided. And I was there for the year. And as a bonus, I even had some money to go on holiday. So it was amazing. But God provided. He showed his faithfulness to me. And so that year, for me, has been one of my memorial stones. So it means like whenever there's a challenge in front of me, or whenever God is calling me again to make some, you know, financial sacrifice, I remember that my security is in him, that he is the one who will take care of me. I don't have to worry about it because he showed his faithfulness to me over and over again. So that gives me that courage to step out in faith over and over again. So we all need memorial stones. Like, what are your memorial stones? What are your testimonies of the things that God has done for you? What stories in your life give you that courage and the faith to keep going again and again? What stories in your life fuel your love for God and lead you to follow him in faith? I mean, we all know that the Christian walk is full of great joys and great adventures, but we also know that it is full of trials and testings, of spiritual warfare and seasons of dryness. And while we know that God's presence in our life is real and is constant, there are times when the battles that we face make us seem like we're all alone. And in those moments, we need memorial stones. We need the stones to help us remember who God is and what he has done for us. We need the stones to help us to remember his faithfulness. So I want to encourage you, if God has done something in your life, whether it's big or small, make a point to remember it. Like, write it down, put it in your journal. Encourage each other with it. And if you're struggling to find memorial stones, then let other people's testimonies lift you up. Again, like we heard this morning with Esther and Claire and Miriam, let other people's stories lift you up. And if you're really struggling to find it, then we have a book full of testimonies, full of memorial stones. Let these stories encourage you as you read and you meditate on the things that God has done in the past. And let it fuel us to go into the future, to build our faith, to remind us that the same God who acted in this book will act again on our behalf. When we go to the book of Hebrews, we see the writer speak about the faith of Abel and Noah and Sarah and Moses and Rahab. People whose lives were inspirational, people who trusted God. And then he goes on to say in Hebrews 12, he says, since therefore we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. So he's saying, since we are surrounded by so many great testimonies, since we're surrounded by so many great memorial stones, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. So we have so many great testimonies, as I said, of God's faithfulness in the Bible, but we know that the ultimate testimony is Jesus. Like, he is our living memorial stones. So as we continue our walk of faith, we look to Jesus. As we face uncertainties in life, we look to Jesus. As we face times of trials and battles, we look to Jesus and we remember. We remember that just like the people of Israel, we too were slaves under the tyranny of sin and death. But God, in his mercy and with great power, he came to rescue us. And in coming to rescue us, he didn't spare any expenses. Like, he gave us his very heart. He gave us Jesus. He did not spare his own son for our sake. We remember that Jesus willingly went to the cross for us. And in his death and resurrection, he ushered us into a new kingdom, into a new inheritance, no longer to be slaves, but now sons and daughters of God, co-heir with Christ. And he died for us not because we deserved it, but simply because he loves us. And we look to Jesus and remember that we're not orphans. We're not alone in this world. He has given us his Holy Spirit, who lives with us and lives within us, constantly pouring God's love into our hearts and empowering us to follow Christ as he leads. So every time we remember Jesus, we remember God's faithfulness, his faithfulness in salvation and redemption. We remember Jesus every time. That even though, as Daniel was saying, even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, he is always with us. And remember that we have a God who is powerful. Not just powerful, like, he is powerful and he is a God of love. And he uses his power to work on our behalf because of his love for us. And every time we remember Jesus, we find faith for today and hope for tomorrow. We find the courage to move forward into all that he has for us. Because we know that the God who has brought us this far is the same God who will carry us through until we see his face in glory. So we remember. If you forget anything, well, don't forget. Remember to remember. That is basically, remember God, remember his faithfulness, remember his goodness as we walk through life. Remember who he is. Remember what he has done. Because he is faithful, he is true, and he will carry us through.